Welcome to The Local Point. My name is Andrew Day and I'm the leader of Warwick District Council. This is an informal, behind-the-scenes conversation with people who are shaping the policies and programs, touching lives right across Warwick District and thrashing through some of the real issues we're working on at the moment across the district. Welcome, everybody. We're back at 1 Mill Street again. Another month has flashed by, and I've got some good, fun guests here today to talk with us and share some of the exciting vision we've got for Leamington Spa and for our whole not-for-profit community across the Warwick District. And firstly, can I introduce Nigel Shanahan, which, to be fair, I expect many people don't need to be introduced to you. Welcome, Nigel.
Thank you.
And it's good to have you here. Well, why am I saying that? This is your place. And then I've also got Mark Lee, who is the new chair of our Leamington Transformation Board. Welcome, Mark.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, good to have you. They're both my fresh guinea pigs for this month's broadcast of The Local Point. And can I just stress, this is a very informal conversation, so we get a chance to shoot the breeze and really just talk about some of the thinking behind the various powerful initiatives both you guys are involved in. And I'm looking forward to hear what you've got to say as well, I might add. So, Nigel, this is the most amazing place. I mean, you introduced me here as a mentor, and you haven't yet drawn too much on my services. It's probably a good idea. But what was the inspiration?
Wow. I guess where it all came from, Andrew, was I sold my business in 2018. It was called Rant and Rave. And we, Desi and I, were wandering around Jefferson Gardens talking about the future and what it held for us. And I'd got this thing in my mind that I didn't want to just go off playing golf. I wanted to do some things. And
is that because you came to golf? Isn't that great? Or
it spoils a good walk type of that's how I would say. We at the same time, I'd got this idea of Make Good Grow, which was about businesses being able to do their pieces of good and give back, but in an easier manner than was currently out there. So Make Good Grow was in my mind, and hopefully we'll talk about that bit more later.
Yeah.
And we literally looked across the road and saw this red brick building. I said, what a gorgeous building.
It is a gorgeous building.
And, you know, what's going on with it? And and it's sort of fallen into a bit of disuse, and we thought it was up for sale. Well, it said sold.
Oh, really?
And we were like, wow, there's a planning notice on here that's expired. It says sold. I wonder. And on Monday we phoned, not knowing what we might do with the building, which is...
Okay, that's a vision for you.
It's very brave.
zero vision.
Yeah. And But 100% passion by the sound of it.
Yeah, and they just said, and now, you know, they said, in all seriousness, the estate agent said, I don't really want you to waste my time, was one of his comments. Yeah. And the second one was, it came back on the market an hour ago. And if you don't mess me about, I can tell you exactly what price we're looking for it. We just don't want any time wasters. Mm-hmm. And we looked at it that afternoon and put an offer in that evening without really fully knowing. We had a bit of a plan, but we didn't know. We wanted to do something community spirited.
Yeah.
Let's say that.
Yeah.
And Mill Street was born off the back of that.
So it sounds like it's a lot to do with place as well. I mean, it is the right building in the right place for you. And and you then built the vision around that? Is that kind of the way it works?
It is. Yeah, I think that word legacy comes to mind. I suppose you're sort of facing, you're in your mid-50s.
You've done well. I mean, you did well in business, and you're thinking about, you know, is this all that matters? Is this where it's going to end?
Yeah, is this what it's all about and where it goes? And, you know, there was this feeling, it sounds a bit morose, but I have said it before, if I fell off my perch, would I be entirely happy with everything?
Yeah.
Or was it my time to do a little bit more of passing it forward? And I felt, we both of us felt that it was a time to do some passing forward. So that was in our mind at the same time. And we also had been in an environment where work had been dull corridors, places of work were dull corridors with rooms hanging off them. And we thought, you know, there's got to be a new way forward. And this was pre-pandemic, but it was still emerging as a thought process anyway. And so we thought, you know what, we could do a community work-orientated, community-spirited solution.
So let's talk about 1 Mill Street just a bit, about what's on offer here and the sorts of people that have been attracted to come and work here. I mean, what's the deal? If I'm signing into 1 Mill Street, what am I experiencing? Obviously, I have a beer in front of me right now.
Yeah.
So you do have a bar, and a very nice bar, I might add.
Yeah.
But also food and coffee and all these sort of lovely things.
Well, it evolved. I suppose the core was co-work, you know, and co-work's a concept of paying a little bit less to work in a place because you're renting a desk and not the larger environment. But it came from a place where co-work was about collaboration. It was a place to meet people, to socially interact, to professionally interact. Mm-hmm. And it came, that was its core. And then I think coffee house, bar,
coffee's always
podcast studio that we sit in today, event space were the peripheral pieces that we thought, you know what, if it was sort of going to tick a lot of the boxes and it became a chameleon type of multi-use type thing, then perhaps we should add these pieces to it. So this is a place where people, and we talk about blurring the lines between work and play.
So true.
You know? Yeah. We all want that, don't we? You know, work isn't right. Work, sturdy, sit up straight, do your job, pick up your briefcase, put the remnants of your sandwiches and walk out the corridor and then start, you know, having your life. We blur. And this is, I think, the new way forward as well. And it was certainly even pre-pandemic. It's just that pandemic's probably accelerated that feeling of...
But you've had a great response, Nigel. I mean, you've got people from all sorts of backgrounds. It's not just, you know, you're... technologically savvy digital sort of nomad types, but all sorts of traditional business people also taking space here and then growing on their business, and they can start with a corner of, you know, in the upstairs open space, or they can grow on to have their own 2 or 3 person space and so on.
Well, thank you. I mean, kind words. Thank you. Flexible workspace, meaning not just flexible as in you can work in any way you want, but you can start off very small and incrementally grow out of the space, to be perfectly honest, and grow on to other physical spaces in the Leamington area. But I think also we wanted to make it a place that everybody felt welcome. And genuinely, one of the things we did that other co-works didn't do is we welcome the public, you know. So most co-work buildings are, so you're a membership and you come and you're a member. And we've created a sort of downstairs environment that said, no, everyone's welcome here. And if you are, you don't have to be in business. You come and have a meeting with somebody because it's a place to work, but it's a place to meet and connect.
And you get we like that. You get charities in too. I've been in for a couple of presentations you've done in this nice open area here. Yep. So that it creates a genuine sense of community.
Yeah.
The other bit, which I thought was really interesting, is that I might be a specialist in games, but right next to me might be someone who's a specialist, I don't know, in financing or making apps or something. And because they're hanging out together and drinking coffee together, they're... The sort of rubber, the water cooler effect, I think the Americans call it, is a very big feature here, isn't it?
It's a real thing, and it's something that we didn't anticipate to be as positive as it has. You know, people will start talking to each other in the queue to get a coffee.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you see them having a meeting, and then suddenly there's a friendship born out of it. And, you know, we have some members that say, oh, I've had 10 different collaborations with 10 different members in 10 different ways. And that, for me, is the magic. You know, I love that. I absolutely love that. That's sort of the dream, is A, that people say, I feel really welcome and there's an energy. That's one thing. And B is when they say, oh, my business has really benefited from the fact that I've learned things, I've collaborated with people. And it's the community helping themselves. It's this community helping the community. Yeah. You know, I love that sort of feeling. And I know it sounds a bit romantic and a bit wishy-washy, but it's sort of real. There's some real stuff going on out there. And
people are making money. They're growing businesses. I guess you're growing an alumni of businesses that have graduated from One Mill Street as well, and I know 2 or 3 of those, and doing very well because they started with some really strong foundations.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's a funny one, because in flexible workspace, you don't tie anybody down. I mean, in traditional workplaces, you sign a lease and it's a 2-year lease. You might get 6 months in and think, our circumstances have changed.
Yeah.
How do we extricate ourselves? Well, here it's, you give us either 1 or 3 months notice and you're gone. And that's right for business. So, it's hard for a business model, but it is the business model. You have that thing, we're vacating that office because, hey, we've had so success. It's a double-edged sword. Yeah. You know, it's a blessing and a curse, right?
It is, but also it means there's a space for others to come through and so we go on. But it very much, I'm wondering to bring Mark in here because it's very much... set a pace, if you like, for this part of South Leamington and an opportunity for us to really rethink what we can do in Leamington Spa and for our businesses. And entrepreneurial new starts are the absolute green shoots we need if we're going to grow, says the Prime Minister, our economy. So, you planted a flag here at 1 Mill Street. And I might say to anyone listening, I think some people do listen, but if you are listening and you haven't been into 1 Mill Street, come and visit. It's quite
everyone's neat. Welcome.
Really are welcome. That's absolutely genuine. Yeah. Thank you. So, mate, you've taken on a heck of a job here. So, Mark, you've taken on the job as chair of the Leamington Transformation Board. Now, come on.
Almost. Independent chair.
Independent.
You insisted on that word.
I did. Come on.
It's slipping already.
You are complete. Come on now. So tell me more. What? I'm going to inquire a bit more about who you are in a moment, but just give me a shape of what the job is as you've seen it coming into the role.
I've had one board meeting and I've been in post possibly a couple of weeks, depending on what date my arrangement finally starts.
Yes, quite. And no contract yet.
Well, I'm sure that will come. It's all good understanding. And what I can see is a stream of interesting projects across the town that can lift certain areas and certain buildings and certain places with improvements to buildings. And One Mill Street is a great example of a private sector project. There are other ones which have been really catalysed by the council, district council or town council, mainly district really, because that's where the land ownership has been or the ability to facilitate something. And so there's a string of projects across Old Town and New Town which all contribute to taking Leamington forward and transforming it. And I see the challenge really is getting some cohesion into that and a really cohesive vision that has maybe four aspects that might say we want to improve movement, we want to improve life quality, we want to improve working, we want to, all different angles. And then against those aspects of the vision, we can look at the projects and we can say, how do these projects contribute to each of those four key themes that we're trying to create here? So that then starts to bring all the projects together and gives us a story that we can tell to everybody who lives in Leamington who understands then what's being done here.
Quite right,
and it's not just people who live in Leamington, because a lot of people visit Leamington either for work or because they live in another little town or village nearby and Leamington offers more than their local place does. And we haven't quite got a big tourist industry here, but that could grow as well. And we could grow more visitors into Leamington over time. And I can see that those people, for all those different reasons of being in Leamington, it'd be really helpful if we can get a message across them of what we're trying to achieve for them and for the town and how all these projects hang together. And that's before we get onto the transport projects and the movement projects, which there are plenty of aspects of Leamington where air quality isn't great, there's congestion, and there are going to be solutions to improve the transport and movement around in and out through and in Leamington. So I can see that my role as independent chair is to start to pull all of this together, not just in the vision that is in place from 2018, but life has moved on quite a lot in the last four years. And we need to bring that vision up to date, look at what we're really trying to achieve now, and then set out a framework of how we're going to do it, and almost put some not hard boundaries, but enough boundaries to give it focus, so that we all know which area we're trying to improve, what is Leamington Town Centre. We're not necessarily going to do every house that's 2 miles away or even a mile away. We're really looking at a key geographic area and key activity within that area that's in the scope of our mission.
You've got quite a job, if you don't mind me saying, as an independent chair, because really the board is also it's aligning all three levels of local government in Leamington Spa, and trying to keep everyone in step. So we've got the town council with a recently minted neighbourhood plan, which is great. So we've got a sense of direction there from what the community's given us. We've got the district council, of course, and their mischievous leader, and you've got the county council, particularly the highways authority, present on the board. And then to support all of that, you've also got an advisory group that's being drawn together so that you can go out and ask for specific, because there's an enormous amount of, what really strikes me, in Leamington, there's an enormous amount of talent. You know, people that for their day job do stuff we couldn't afford to buy in that expertise. And if we can use that volunteer resource through this advisory group, then we've got a chance to actually try and, you know, get well above what we can pay for, if you like, for Leamington.
I've spoken to a lot of people since I've let it be known that I'm doing this role, and I've had thousands and thousands of page impressions on LinkedIn, but also hundreds of people who've contacted me with messages, and a lot of people who want to buy me a coffee at the moment. Maybe they think there might be something professionally in it for them, but a lot of people that I didn't know lived in this area do,
yeah.
And I've met them in my professional life in other areas.
Yeah.
And so this morning ended up talking to a surveyor who I didn't realise lived in Leamington, but he's done all my dilapidations work for the last 10 years and is a from a big building surveying firm and wants to get involved. And he came to me this morning and he'd canvassed his family about what they want to see transformed in Leamington.
Yeah.
And his 10-year-old daughter would like to see a Zara.
Shop. Of course.
So I think there's a theme there that actually the shopping is going to be one of the points. Retail, which came from a 10-year-old, would like to see something upgraded in the shops.
Yeah.
That's a big ask at the moment when the direction of travel is online and to the retail parks.
Mm.
But there's definitely a need to keep some retail in the town centre.
I mean, you'll be working in closely with the BID, for example, and I know they're going through a renewal, I think, early next year, but... We, in this advisory group, we've got a chance to really engage the different sort of vested interests or stakeholders across the town, even if they don't live in the town. And then the other piece is that what you're doing fits in with our wider local plan work, which is going on, and the new plan will be in place for 2025, I should say. So it's quite a pivotal moment for us, isn't it, Mark? I mean, you've got a job.
I think there's a lot to do. Now COVID has gone. It's not quite the new normal because there is a bit of other disruption in the world going on at the moment, which is distracting people. I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about sort of the geopolitics rather than national politics.
Of course.
And I don't think we're quite in a normal yet, but we're at a point where we can prepare for it because we hope COVID's out of the way. Mm. People have changed their way of working.
Yeah,
and it's not... everyone's had experience of working from home and they've tested the technology and they know it works and they don't have to go into the office every day, even if they used to work for an office-based operation. An example I was given today is a large office block in Coventry, an office sort of campus, where typically before COVID it was 80-85% occupancy. During COVID and a year ago, it was down to 16% occupancy, and it's back up to 32%. But will it ever get back up to the mid-80s? Mm. And I don't think it necessarily will, because everyone's realised they don't need to be in the office 5 days a week. They need to have time they can collaborate with colleagues, and people can learn off each other and spark ideas off each other. But they can do an awful lot at home, or even if they can't work from home because they haven't got the right facilities, then there would be more and more demand for places like One Mill Street for them to pop down with their laptop and be in a sort of working environment that's separate from the home environment.
Work near home or third space type of positioning.
Exactly.
Hybrid working, isn't it? This new thing.
And then the other thing that's coming up is that everyone's realised that there's more to life than just their career and their salary and their promotion. And a lot of people are realising they actually quite like more control of their life and don't necessarily want to just carry on what they used to do of working for a big corporation till they retire. They'd like to take their experience they've got by the time they're in their 40s and collaborate more on a project basis, more on a freelance basis.
Yeah.
And where IT a few years ago would have an IT project and you'd pull freelancers in for the project. That's starting to spread to other professional sectors now for projects. And I'm seeing that even the big multidisciplinary built environment consultants are starting to say, we want this size of office block, we want 60% of it core, and we want 20% of it to serviced offices that we can expand and contract into project by project.
Yes.
And we'll pull people in when we have a big HS2
Makes
type
sense,
project,
yeah.
But we won't be paying for it at other times. And that swing space is important. But the way of working, it indicates, that underlies it, of pulling together project teams, is starting to emerge as a new way of work.
Yes.
And that's why spaces like this are really valuable. And as we transform Leamington, we're going to recognise that we don't necessarily want to build a... we don't need a dozen big office blocks.
Yeah.
We need more collaborative space, more shared offices
for
those emerging businesses and the consultants, who freelancers, who used to work full-time in one place, but are now going to do 6 months on a project here, and then they'll be chatting to mates, and there's another project coming up in 5 months' time, they'll... try and do both for a month and take off on the next project.
Yes.
So I just believe there's a different way of working that we've got to recognise in the place that we're creating for people
Completely.
In the future.
And Leamington's got a really strong balance sheet of assets of that makes it a great destination. I firmly believe our parks and open spaces, I mean, you're just a throw from the Mill Street Bridge and from Jefferson Gardens.
It's beautiful.
And beautiful. Mm. And we've got, we've now had, you know, seven Trent Water say they're going to make, they're spending 55 million quid just to improve the water quality so that we can go swimming, if we wish, in the Leamington. It'll be clean, clean rivers. So, as you used to be able to do, you know, in the history of Leamington's been around water in one form or another, whether it's the baths or whether they were bathing elephants, as I understand it, in the Leam at one point, you know. Mm. And it's quite an interesting theme. So as you draw this through, if you like, in the vision for Leamington Spa and bringing all these stakeholders together, there's a lot to work with, is what I'm trying to get at. I mean, and in that sort of new work environment, people want to come to places that are just cool.
Yeah.
You know, great to hang out. I can do my work. And it's kind of nice to have people visit. It's only an hour to London and less than, like, 20 minutes to Oxford and half an hour or less to Birmingham.
Yeah.
It's such a great location.
Well, we're blessed. I mean, the town is blessed because it's a beautiful town. Like you say, it's got some natural beauty, but it's... its position as well for to go north or south, east or west is absolutely fantastic, really. So
there's lots of opportunities.
It's quite, it is sad to see the demise of the high street. You know, I mean, it's it's not dissimilar to every other high street in England, in UK. But it reminded me of a conversation I had way back. You know, this is going back 10 years. We're talking to a customer, an ex-customer of ours, from the chief exec of June Shoes, and he was talking about the high street and how it was changing.
Mm.
And this whole concept of, you know, the online challenge and trying to get the mix right, and this whole idea of having very big shopping park type of premises versus being on, say, in his eyes, Oxford Street. And he said, what we've got to do in Oxford Street, create an entirely different experience. So they talked, and I thought it was way ahead of its time, of people walking, you know, yes, you're there to buy shoes, or you're there to, they hope you're there to look at shoes. Well, he created a concept of a walkway for people. You try your shoes on, you actually get filmed. After the event, if you share your information with the store, they will send you the footage of you walking down the runway, the catwalk,
with your cool
with
shoes,
the
on.
Shoes on. So there are these are experiences. These are
retail experience.
And this is where I think, you know, we talk about the future high street and what does it look like, and future high street fund. It's really hard to pin the tail on the donkey of what the future high street looks like. But for me, it looks something about entertaining as well as merchandising.
Mm.
It's got to involve the customer in some way. The customer's got to be part of the production.
Yeah.
That's what I think then creates this, you know, so I think it's...
That's really clever.
And I think on top of that, you won't necessarily expect forever to go into the retail environment and walk out with a bag of the product. No. Very often you'll just experience it, try it out, and then click a button, it'll arrive at your home the next day.
It'll be by drone, probably.
Who knows? So it won't,
I think you're entirely right.
Shops will be more showrooms than warehouses.
But also where you go to get advice and you know, the product care and the expertise and to check out and compare. But the other part is it's got to be fun. You know, it's got to be a place you want to go for entertainment, to go there to catch up, meet, like you've done here. People come to meet here and it's fun.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not a hardship then, is it? You know, if you have to go and sit on your laptop and do a few
emails. No, I think I was reading, I'm trying to remember the book that I've been reading, but the title of the book, but it was basically looking at the American system, and they were saying one thing the Americans have got so wrong is they've lost their sense of community, because the big cities have got all this out of town shopping where they go and do the big shop type thing.
Yeah. Mm.
But the communities have lost out because they don't have any of those walking places.
Exactly.
They don't have those community things. And I think we need to add that into the mix of the solution, is it still needs to be that community independent type of thing.
And
alongside
people, people live in Leamington. And my view, we could actually enable more people to live in Leamington, and that would strengthen things like the local shop provision.
Yeah.
You know, the dry cleaner, the supermarket, the Tesco, the whatever. And I'm firmly convinced that some work for the Transformation Board really is to try and bring in some private investment into Leamington as well. Yeah. It can't all come off the back of you know, government grants like the Future High Streets Fund, as welcome as that is.
Yes.
Do you think we can do that? Do you think this is attractive enough?
I'm sure we can, and there are several places where that's been done already in specialised areas. So you've already got Audley with Binswood House as a specialist. They've national leader in retirement housing.
That is a top shelf
offer. Product.
Yeah.
And they've chosen Leamington because they can see that there's a great catchment here a great town for people who want to live in their property to then walk into a lovely town centre.
Mm.
At the other end of the spectrum, you've got purpose-built student accommodation just by the canal.
Yep.
And that's both of those things that more could be done with to relieve the pressure of family housing, which might be either student HMOs or an elderly person knocking around in a big house that could house a whole family of six people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So getting the right purpose-built retirement or student accommodation, that you can then follow on from student to graduates who you want to keep in the area, because you say Leamington's known for its large student population and the vibrancy of the independent scene here.
6,000,
because it's got so many students here. And I think students are a real asset to the town. Mm. Obviously, there are times when there's friction between residents and different times of day. They
live on a completely different clock cycle, and I just wish they would take their bins out. There are those sorts of things. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to become locus parentis where you end up parenting someone else's kids in town.
No,
but they do offer a vibrancy to the town, they're just not properly accommodated, are they?
They support all the coffee shops, all the independent little restaurants, pizza joints, and we'll enjoy those places as well.
Yeah,
but they're there because we've got such a big student population to a large extent. Mm. So why not go a bit further than that and say, well, we've got loads of great IT graduates coming out of Warwick University, and all the IT companies around the country recognise the quality of a Warwick University IT degree.
Correct.
And a lot of them are coming into the gaming industry and the coding for the automotive industry in Leamington. And Leamington's strength in the gaming and coding industry is just enormous. The list of really big companies that are here, including people like Microsoft.
Mm. Yeah.
So if you've got that world class of company based in Leamington, then graduates who start off in an undergraduate career here will want to stay, and
they shouldn't have to go to London.
So there will be more accommodation coming in, which may take a step on from student accommodation to co-living, and there are providers coming in now for co-living who will be a little bit up from student accommodation.
What's co-living?
If you say you go to London, you graduate, you go to London, you share a house with two or three friends and rent a house with two or three friends, you have a bedroom each because you can't afford to
have the whole house.
Immediately buy the whole house or rent the whole house yourself.
Mm.
And you actually like a bit of community there.
Mm.
So you'll get a co-living provider who will do almost cluster flats so that you might share a living area or cooking area or a dining area, just like a student flat cluster. Mm. But you've got a slightly different quality of space where you're living,
a bit more room, better finishes,
and you're able to pay a bit more for it, so you can have a better finish and more square footage. So that type of thing could come into the area, especially in the centre, because if you're living in the centre, two streets away from the parade, or
you don't always eat in the kitchen, you're going to go downstairs to the coffee shop.
You can go to the coffee shop, you can eat in the kitchen, you can do either. But the other thing I was going to say is you don't need transport.
No,
you can walk to the station and you don't need a car.
No car.
You might have a bike store, but you don't need cars. And so it helps on the movement piece as well, to have people living in quite high density in the centre, but actually enjoying their space because they've got all the other facilities around the corner.
Mm. Yeah.
They don't need to have their own dining room because they go to the restaurant.
Yeah, that's true.
And they've got a selection of 50.
But it's the way people have been living in London for ages. I mean, they don't actually cook in their kitchens. They tend to go out, or they use the public transports and so on. It's a different way of living than we're used to in Leamington.
Yeah, and I think where you've said there's a bulge of younger people in Leamington, there's also a bit of a bulge of older people. There's a bit of a gap in the middle, I suspect.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if we can build that vibrant, but also, affluent, wealthier middle
section, I say, if we get better purpose-built student accommodation, so it could be better managed, it's in the right locations, etc., That then might just free up some of the houses that have been taken over by HIMOs for conversion, for family start homes, etc., and bringing residents back into Leamington to live here. And then again, it changes the drumbeat. Yep. Instead of Leamington needing to be another retail park, because, you know, free parking and all the things that we've got at the Shires, it's a totally different experience and a much richer one, I think, in many
ways.
For
sure, yeah.
So I can see that increased density of living in the town centre as part of our vision of where we go
now,
forward.
Isn't it funny? Is that what the flag you planted here at 1 Mill Street, you got us thinking somewhat differently about the way we work. Yes, the world turned with you. I have to say, Nigel, there was, you know, inspirational vision on your part. But what it's meant is we're now thinking of South Leamington in a very different way. And I know you're supporting officers and advisors to your board, Mark, about what we might do in places like the Stoneleigh Arms and so on. So do you want to talk a bit about what's coming forward there and how that's going and how that will complement what's going on? Who am I going to turn to? I'll go to Mark first and then back to Nigel.
Well, I think my starting point on the old town is obviously that it was built around the time that all the baths were in Leamington. Yes. Leamington became the spa town. And there aren't any baths in Leamington now because medical practice has moved on. But there's a really good housing provision in the terraces around Lamb Terrace, Mill Street, just all around here. So there's beautiful housing around here.
Lovely places. Yes.
And so south of the river, you've got the station. You've got some really good quality housing, terraced housing, Georgian terraced housing around here.
Yeah.
And then you've got one or two things of the old High Street or Bath Street or whatever it's called, going down with the buses and the the large off license, and then that bridge, and some of the worst traffic congestion and air quality in the area. But there are plans to do something about that, which is really important. So why would you go south of the river? A, because you live here. B, because you want to get to the station. I'm struggling for a C at the moment. Bon Mill Street, C. There isn't really a
maybe it's A, 1 Mill Street.
And then it'll become Spencer Yard, and obviously there's the Loft Theatre, and there's the new bar and rooms on the corner by the river.
Yeah, the terrace. I think it's called. Yeah.
Yes,
but there still needs to be more of a draw into the south of the river, the old town, because the old town needs to re-establish the premier position it originally had in Leamington. And there's plenty of upgrading that can take place if the right environment is built that attracts the right the right people in.
And I'm guessing I'm going to go to Nigel here, because I'm building on that. I mean, you get to a certain size of business here and you pop them out the other end, but where do they go? I mean, how do you, is it what, 3-4 person size and you start to look for other premises?
Well, our largest office is 12 person.
12, I beg your pardon.
But you know, you're right. There's certainly there's a need for grow on space. I think that's probably the general point. There's a need for grow on space, and you made the point, Mark, about coherence. The coherence to the narrative of yes, this is flexible working, and we hope that people come, and at some point they leave us in a better shape, and they go on somewhere else, but they're still part of the narrative of the town and of Mill Street, hopefully. So there's probably a need for that, but in a flexible manner. I think that's the thing. I think no longer can we have this scenario where shared, serviced offices, because I think there's a lazy term. Serviced office means it can be a box and it's all right, but you pay us the rent and that's there for, and it's some way serviced. I think that certainly needs to change, because you can't be in an environment like this and move to your serviced office and be in a bit of a grey box. So there is a need, I think, for a sort of a strategy around the sort of business ecosystem here. But there's a great opportunity. This is not a criticism I think there's an opportunity here. And I know it is, as I said, pin the tail on the donkey, because so many things are in flux at the moment. So I think the watchword is, let's make it as flexible as we can.
And also local matters. I mean, we have got to remember, the control we've got about local issues.
Yeah.
And we should never, ever lose sight of that or give it away. And that's why the work you're doing is so important, both of you, in my view. But can I just also say, I think because our economy is a very strongly service-based economy, the opportunity to spin off new businesses is vital to keep that growth going.
Yeah.
So for example, your business that grows from here and goes off and maybe becomes 10, well, it might, someone someone might spin out of that business and be back here
yeah.
because they're now one person again and starting yet another venture yeah. with a different perspective.
Well, I've been struck by the amount of members that are here of also working on a side hustle in one way or the other.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean what they're doing today isn't sort of core to them, but there's always a lot of them that have these ideas and concepts and side hustles as well. And I think that's really quite exciting, you know, that level of innovation that's going on and people sharing resources.
It makes us much more flexible and diverse. And I guess your thinking for Leamington in what you're setting out there, Mark, is enabling us to be a lot more, you know, flexible and ready to respond to change and take opportunities where we see them, isn't it? If you can provide that variety of space and
I think that's got to happen. We've got to provide the right environment for the businesses and the people and the population and to thrive. So if we can see a gap in the market, then the public sector can facilitate and encourage that to be provided by private sector. And if we can, if we've got the vision and we've got the location and we can say we really see a need for this, it will bring people in. And this is where I see us going from a vision first, which I don't think will be particularly controversial, because a vision is quite easy to get people to buy into if you do it well. You then get into the sort of the more detailed action plans where some people think, well, that's not so great for me, that's not quite sometimes it gets a bit more parochial. But if you've got the full picture of, I know that might cost you a bit there, but you're going to gain all of this there.
Yeah.
So the big picture still works when you get into the detail of action plans and making it happen, implementation. But
this is ground that is not altogether unfamiliar for you. I mean, you've had, this has been very much your bailiwick in the past. And I just want to, I mean, many may not know much of your background, Mark. So do you want to just share with us a little bit there? Because you haven't just, I know you're a local resident. We've actually both served on the Coventry and Warwickshire Local Enterprise Board, and I have to say that's not why you were appointed, and it was a completely independent process, I should stress, but one on merit. And I have to say, a lot of applicants for the position, so congratulations in taking on that independent role. But it's because of your background. Do you want to just share with a little bit of what you've done?
I mean, it's really just the last 15 years of what I've been doing, because previously
just 15 years, that's all.
Because I was
and go to jail for 15 years. I mean,
before that, I was a boring accountant.
Oh, were you? Okay.
as an engineer originally, then an accountant, and worked in banking and finance. So my introduction to property, apart from some property lending early on in my career, was I'm going to be a finance director for a property organisation. But getting into that, it was it was like a small town. So it was an area of Birmingham where we were responsible for a lot of owning a lot of the property, directing the change and the regeneration that would go on there, and bringing the whole area up to date. So I started off as a finance director in the global financial crisis, trying to stabilize everything.
It's not a job I'd like, but
stabilize everything from, you know, a lot of major projects where there's no occupiers there at the end who are going to be paying rent, speculative projects. All the money had been spent on assembling the site, demolishing, fees, planning, and then some started building, some hadn't, but there was a big sunk investment and borrowings that had gone with them.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of banks, a lot of borrowings, and the first 3 years was as finance director stabilising all of that, and we got it back to being cash positive, zero. Well, plus cash instead of minus debt.
Yeah.
And at that point, the previous chief executive retired, and I threw my hat in the ring and said I'd like to take this on for the next lap. So at that point, I was not just involved in property as a finance person, but responsible for developing the estate going forward. And there were a lot of areas that needed work from the 1970s large 1970s office buildings when companies used to have big regional admin centres, regional offices, and those all needed to be reimagined, knocked down basically, and new things built in their place. So we went through a long process of creating a new village centre, a town centre, village centre, to act as a hub for the regeneration of the office stock.
Yeah.
And having done that with a lot of names that I see in Leamington now as well, but a lot of independence. We really went for independence rather than national chains.
And that's a big part of Leamington, isn't it?
That is a big part of Leamington.
Yeah. It is huge.
And even if we went for change, we tried to keep it to operations with less than 20 outlets.
Yeah.
So, it's the right sort of scale to still feel local and not have got completely corporatized. Mm. And so there's still that local community involvement in the way they think and they feel, because the founders are still there and they still call into their local branch and have a bit of pride that it's their business. Mm. So those ones we were very happy to have, and some ways better than the complete independent, because they had already gone through some of the growth pains of a business and were more stable. So we built a town centre, started the regeneration, and realised that we needed. I mean, the vision was there. We knew what we were doing, but then we sort of formalised the vision and looked professionally at things like transit, changes in working practice, changes in the way people live, what was going on with education. All of those things came in as factors to a plan that we put together, a vision that we put together, which then had red lines around specific sites that we could see how we would like them to be regenerated. Yeah. And then we could go out to find the right people and encourage them to come and put some time and effort into thinking how they would take on a site.
Made for the job then, basically.
I think so.
For the job.
And also we've got to understand the world we're coming into is one that won't be driven by public money. That we've got to be able to build a financial case that this is an attractive place to invest because the prospects for the future are outstanding.
Yeah.
And I do believe the DNA for that, sorry to put it that way, but is here. Mm. But we've got to articulate it better. And where there's a place for public funding is to enable, to get it started, to put the framework in place. It will not be in delivering the sort of aspiration that I know the colleagues on the Transformation Board have got. And this is not just any other spa town. This, we should have aspiration which is comparable at least to Bath, in my view. And we should not be thinking of this as a second tier, third tier.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I totally agree. It's, somebody whose name escapes me said to me, "What do you think about the idea of Jesson Gardens having the winter lights?" And I said, "Oh, I hadn't heard about the project." And he told me more about it. I thought, that sounds fantastic. Mm. And that weekend, I spoke to my parents. So they're Leamington born and bred.
Yeah.
Well, actually, my father's Irish, but moved over here when he was 8. And he said, "Do you know what? We used to have winter lights here." Mm. And he said, "And people would come in busloads."
Yeah.
Tourists would become because it was such a beautiful, wondrous attraction. He said, "I never really understood why it stopped. Mm-hmm. And those are the sorts of things, because it's so adjacent spa.
It's distinct.
It's a point of difference. It's those things that I think we need, a couple of those points of difference, even if they are aesthetic in nature, but they draw people in to talk about. Because when I was a child, you know, Leamington Spa. Oh, you mean Royal Leamington Spa? It's wonderful. I sort of fell out of love with Leamington, really, as I was sort of growing up. I suppose your familiarity breeds contempt. Mm. And it was only really when I started showing people around Mill Street, when it was a building site, and sort of telling them about the vision, they would say, "Well, I've moved up from, and it was da-da-da, and I will never move from Leamington. I love the place." Mm. And it's...
It rekindled.
You
fell in love with your hometown again as a result of other people telling you how gorgeous it is. That's like a long marriage, that, isn't it, in a way? I mean, people say, "Gosh, you've got a gorgeous wife." Yeah.
Have I?
Or handsome husband, I should say, just to be politically correct. But it's true. Sometimes you've got to be reminded about what really is always been in front of your eyes.
Yeah.
And it's a challenge I think many will join you in wanting to support, Mark. And I think you know that. And it's a very exciting one. I'm delighted to have you on the team. I have to say, though, the thing I've been joking about is, here we are having a glass of beer, is the Stoneleigh Arms, I believe, might, the possibility of having a micro brewery in there. And I think you should pour us the first beer once that thing's done one day, hopefully in the not
Great
too distant
idea.
Future.
Well, I'll accept that as long as I can drink the first beer
Yeah, of course you can.
Or maybe the second. Let someone else have the pull through.
But it sounds like there's a real chance in that, you know, an Althorpe Street, Clement Street, and right the way through there to breathe life back into an area that was just laying fallow, really.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's got a fantastic heritage.
Because if you just take a fully developed town, it's quite difficult to find sites where you can make a difference with some new quality scale development. And there is some land around that area which, okay, there's parking which needs to be reprovided, But there are areas which are under the council's control.
Let's not just have a town that's great for cars. Let's have a town that's great for people.
I think on that side, if you get the right thing there, then and make the right link through to the station, and
active
whatever
travel,
we do with buses
and
cycling,
and scooters,
there will be other ways. There are plenty of other ways to get around as well.
100%.
Not just in the mobility scooter for me, probably.
And I think part of the problem you face, and you talked about it before, you know, it's not a baptism of fire because I think you're very experienced, but you can't please all the people all of the time. And there's sometimes we've just got to be really brave and bold. And I do think that, you know, Andrew in his role has been brave and bold about things, and he won't have, everybody won't be a fan, but I tell you what, 95% of the people are, because you take a position, you're clear in your positioning, so you say, because part of it is, I don't know why they do this. And I think that the part of the role is, let's communicate why we're doing it and how we're doing it. And then everybody, they might not agree, but that's their prerogative.
At least they're part of the conversation.
But at least they're part of the conversation.
Yeah. I think that's the power of doing something like today. So thank you, Andrew, for inviting us.
I couldn't have done it if One Mill Street didn't have the facility to enable me to do it. I know, it's kind of... You see the
virtuous
circle.
Thank you.
Just like Nigel said, you know, getting the communication out with people of why we're doing things and what's being done in their area and why it's being done. You're bringing that out now by doing podcasts like this.
So. I hope so. It's also partly because there's so much latent talent in this town. That's one of the things that really struck me. And that's the other piece I want to just talk a bit now about Make Good Grow.
Okay.
Because this, I mean, I've spent my life, as you know, Nigel, working with charities, helping them raise money, which is why I love the project side of the council's work as well. But this is such an innovative idea. Do you share with us a bit about the concept and then I want to challenge and talk back through that? Yeah.
Well, so Make Good Grow was formed really when I was at Rant and Rave, the idea of it, because as Rant and Rave, we, before I sold the company, we had 120 staff, and all of whom, we had a culture there, a set of values that were really incredibly positive and community spirited. And we did look for things that we could do outside of donating money. Mm. We had a skill set, we had lots of professionals in the company, and we wanted to go and do some things. And the things that we were able to do were physical things like painting garden fences and weeding gardens and so on, which has its place. But I felt that our professional skills were underutilized. So the concept of Make Good Grow that was created off the back of that was all about organizations, businesses that were also donating money, but could also say, you know, we've got a marketing team here, we've got a finance team here, we've got an operations function, we've got development people. How can they be of use in a controlled way as a volunteer for charities that were on their doorstep so that the community of professionals can help the community of causes? And that's the concept. We've created a marketplace. We've extended the marketplace recently so that, because we started off by saying to a cause, tell us what your problems are and we'll try and fix them. And the problem with that was, as soon as the cause said, we need a new website completely.
Yeah.
We then had to do the matching process from the company. So we've sort of changed it around and allowed a business. So this is a cry out to other businesses in the area, a business to say, do you know what? We can do the following and we will pledge the following. And it might be a set of skills or it might be a package of support. Like we'll do a social media strategy. We'll run a marketing campaign. Mm. We will help you with a fundraise activity. Mm. Or we will help you with your financial department. We'll do a finance review, etc., etc. The pledges that we've created have actually extended to products and services. Mm-hmm. So we've got Amtico Flooring, UK Flooring Direct, saying things like, hey, we've got X stock, perfectly good X stock, lots of it, and we will not only give you the stock, we'll pledge the stock, we'll pledge the flooring, but we will also have people come assess your space and fit for you. Wow. And I think that's amazing.
Really generous.
And we've got now organisations that are now saying, oh, I get it. Okay, so it doesn't have to be so the marketing team will do a piece of service work.
Yes.
Yeah. It could be, well, we've got that stock.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we if there was a need in the community to help that? And we just want to drive all the wrinkles out of that whole thing.
Yeah.
And don't, I can't pretend to you guys that, oh, and it's so easy. It's quite a hard
piece
of
easy.
Work to get done. Yeah. But we are getting there. And Rob, who leads Make Good Grow, you know, he's so plugged into, so passionate about what we're trying to achieve, that this marketplace where you pledge, you know, we're hoping can just become bigger and bigger.
So in a way, I'm going to play numpty here. I mean, once upon a time, we had a barter economy. So I was a bread maker and I would make bread and I would exchange my bread with you, Mark, because you're a shoemaker, when I needed shoes. So that was the sort of the way it worked. Yep. Then we ultimately got ourselves some currency, and then we got all excitable and started having finance people, Mark, and bank accounts and doing all of that. That the world got to that space. You've really taken us to a very interesting space here, because you've taken us back to barter, but now what's being transacted is good.
Yes.
Yeah, so making good grow. Yep. So I can, as part of my mission as a business, my ESG or whatever it's called now, I can say, yeah, of course I'm selling Amtico flooring and I'm making good money out of that, but I'm also going to do through my ESG, I'm going to make good grow by offering surplus stock possibly and some staff resource to actually make a contribution to charities in our community.
That's it.
And that's where you're sitting is like a broker. Is that right? You're kind of making that space possible for me, the floor manufacturer, or me, the accountant, or me, the business strategist, to offer what I can do to help charities grow.
Yeah, we're just trying to make it easier. Because, I mean, back in the day when we looked, we did try and look at how do we do this. And there were so many hoops to jump through, and so many organisations said, well, we don't really need that type of help, that we just want to create that marketplace. So, you know, we'll put it up there. And the beauty is, for a business, they can control how much they're doing. Yeah. So if they are, you know, especially in the economic circumstances, struggling, then they can, you know, they can scale things down. They can do something meaningful, but it doesn't have to be world changing, life changing. It can be meaningful to small causes that are out there in our communities.
So, and it's not cannibalizing their actual business, because these charities would never be buying this.
No.
So in a way, they're not taking their business away from themselves by doing something for free.
Yeah. And what we've done,
fascinating, isn't it?
What we've created alongside it is SID. So we've created a social impact dashboard.
Oh, I thought it was a bloke called Sid.
No, he is a little bloke.
A little bloke, isn't
he? He's a little fella called Sid.
He's behind the dashboard, turning the dials.
He's like that.
Okay, your marketeers are going crazy here. So Sid is a dashboard? Now, how does that work?
Yeah, so it's a way of recording. Say you're a brand and you have done a bunch of Make Good Grow projects.
Okay.
But also you've done your own projects. You know, you might have done, you know, people have done marathon runs, they've done bake sales, whatever it is. It's a way of recording that in a digital way, called a social impact dashboard, that highlights the heroes in your business, but also shows all the stakeholders, hey, you know, this is what we've done this year. So instead of it being a little boring paragraph in a shareholder statement,
this
is bringing it to life and making it more meaningful and getting emotion, you know, some emotional content.
It's being updated all the time. So you've got a live thing. It's interesting. I mean, my kids are of an age, I'm clearly old, let's confess. But what motivates them isn't just money. Funnily enough, certainly for my generation and for me, it probably was, you know, pay the bills, make as much money as you can, etc. Yeah. They want to work for people that are firms that are doing good things.
I think that's very important.
And they want to feel like they're adding to that.
So where there's a shortage of talent at the moment and a skill shortage, and it's very difficult to recruit, and you're seeing very fast staff turnover because people are being poached and headhunted to do a similar job, but for a bit more pay all the time. So retaining your talent and recruiting talent, I think, especially with the generation you've just talked about, it'll come up in an interview. So what's your business doing for good? Where's your ESG? And what's your EDI policy? And I think actually businesses are getting quizzed by recruits, and it's becoming a recruitment is essential to be able to show people what you're doing. So what you're talking about on SID is actually great, because you can say to them, let's look on our website, company name /SID, and you straight into our social impact dashboard, and it's all there for you. And you can, if you join us, you can contribute to that.
And it's digital, because that's the other thing, is no one reads annual reports in paper form anymore.
No, and it's sort of laid out in a social media friendly type of style, so it's easily consumed. You know, it isn't it's not a dull read. It's pictures, it's videos, it's emotive content. But I think for me, we created the idea of SID because, hey, you know, and if brands are doing all these wonderful things, how do we record it and show the world, stakeholders, employees, potential employees, etc., the good they're doing? And to be fair, I mentioned the word legacy before, but the legacy play on this one was, well, having a business background, I like to be able to lay out how we would do this, But SID is a way of it sustaining itself downstream besides me. So if I fell off the perch,
okay.
Make Good Grow still has, you know, a future because it's got an income stream. It's laid out, you know, it's a social enterprise. We're not there to try and make money. Yeah. We're there to try and make the good grow. But that's the plan. It's not easy. We're still, you know, finding our way. But,
like anything new, and this is new, it takes time to evolve it, refine it, develop it, understand that how to make it best fit what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
But I just commend you. I think I love the innovation behind the thinking.
Oh, thank you.
And the honest approach you've taken to bringing it forward. And look, I'm going to close us off there. So Nigel and Mark, thank you for joining me today. Can I, in two completely different perspectives, you give me enormous hope for this town and for this community. And just thank you both for what you're doing.
Oh, thank
and for
you.
Joining us today. It's been a great pleasure.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you.
Off to the bar. It's been great having you join our conversations today. Please share any comments or pose questions for future episodes by email to localpoint@icloud.com. Thanks for joining us.